Welcome to Draft Sickos, the show on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed and YouTube channel, where we cover everybody from the biggest of names to the deepest of sleepers. I'm your host, Maxwell Baumbach, and this week I'm joined by a writer and podcaster and YouTube creator for my favorite NBA draft website, NoCeilingsNBA.com. It is Tyler Metcalf. Tyler, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing fantastic, buddy. Excited to do one of these with you. It's been a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been a long time since we've been on something together, so I'm excited to talk ball with you. We've got a real interesting group of players, and like a lot of guys I particularly like wanted your take on specifically, just because I feel like there's some Timberwolvesy kind of skill sets that we're getting into, so should be right up your alley. But as always, make sure you like our videos, subscribe to our YouTube channel, subscribe to our podcast feed, rate and review. It makes it easier to find us. And now that that's out of the way, let's get down to business. I've got an article coming out tomorrow on Thomas Sorber, the freshman from Georgetown. He is kind of one of those surprise out of nowhere mega producers early on in the year. 6'10", 255, big bulky dude, really strong, but really skilled is kind of the main thing that has popped with him. 2.8 assists per game to only 1.6 turnovers. He's got an assist rate sitting at 19.8, which is super high for a big man. Definitely someone who has caught eyes early on in the year. A guy whose tape I was really interested to dive into. But before we kind of get into the nitty-gritty of his game, what have been your early impressions of Sorber? And did you have any sort of like expectations for him coming into the year? Because he was a guy that sort of snuck up on me to a degree.
Yeah, and it's been tricky for me, especially in mm-hmm. these early periods, because you get, for some teams, we're getting insanely good matchups, like night after night after night, mm-hmm. and then you have Georgetown,
yep.
who really hasn't played anyone, but mm-hmm. except for West Virginia, and we can dive into that later. But I mean, kind of big picture, it's always tricky for me when these kind of analytical darlings come out seemingly, you know, quote unquote, come out of nowhere. I know Sorber was like a highly thought of high school recruit. I watched a little mm-hmm. bit of his high school stuff, but whenever these guys have these massive statistical productions and kind of outlier seasons to begin a year, and then you look at the competition and it's like, there's like a 1.5 real teams here.
I
get a little hesitant to fully buy in. Now, if that stuff kind of maintains and continues through, you know, into January, now we're talking about something different because now we've had conference play pick up a little bit and invitationals and all that kind of good stuff. But, you know, regardless of the opponent, when you watch them, you can see a lot of NBA-esque stuff with the skill, the movement patterns, and then some other stuff that is a little more questionable.
Yeah. Okay. We're actually at a pretty similar junction with him then. Cause that was like my big thing here. It's like the way he's producing is really important to NBA mm-hmm. scalability. Like the fact that you can put him at the top of the key. And like, I kind of like that they run a lot of flex stuff because it's like not exactly what he's going to do in the NBA, but it does show that like, hey, if you give him the ball at the top of the key, he can just wire the ball directly to a guy who's cutting. And there's been like not true short roll stuff, but stuff where it's like designed to be a pick and pop and then he makes a pass out of it where yeah. it's like, okay, that it can be a functional way that you deliver the ball to people. Yeah. Like I've just been really impressed with the variety of passes that he can make, the placement on some of the high low stuff. I don't think he's a great screener, but I think when it's a handoff, he's a better screener. Like if it's a standard set the screen, it's not great. But if it's a DHO, he does a good job of like getting in the way.
Well, in those situations too, that kind of makes sense because it brings in the threat of his ball skills and his ability to, you know, all right, is he going to keep it here? And the defense mm-hmm. has to respect it a little more too, rather than just a, you know, traditional screen.
Yep. And then I also think just like the fact that he is a threat to score matters quite a bit as well. Really efficient around the basket, getting to the line a ton, like super high free throw rate, just under 80% there, making a third of his threes on about one a game. Good putback guy, has some post polish, which is like not the most important NBA thing, but it's nice to have. Like it's nice that he'll get a seal on a smaller guy and then use some misdirection, create a little advantage inside. But I ultimately just think like, hey, this guy's super productive. Right. I did some research for this piece just on like assist rates, assist to turnover rates on bigs in the last like decade, like from 2014 to now. And like, it's just so much more important to pass if you're right now. Like assist to turnover ratio is almost double. Assist rates for guys drafted is almost doubled at the big man positions. Like you've just got to be able to do it now. And Sorberg does it. My concerns are more defensive. Would you say that's where you sit as well?
For the most part, yeah. Like in high school, I liked some of his interior stuff when he wasn't asked to, you know, do much. And being that big in high school, it's a good starting point at the minimum. But even with Georgetown, I think there have been some really good flashes with how he kind of moves in space, some of the defensive playmaking stuff. When he's locked in, I hate that phrase.
I do too, but you got
when he's locked in,
yeah,
there's some really good stuff there. And he got into foul trouble, but like in that West Virginia game, I thought there were some really good flashes of him kind of being able to switch and contain in space for a little bit, you know, rotate from the weak side occasionally, but that when he's locked in, you know, Platitude is doing a lot of work with him because it seems like on the defensive end, the effort, the attention to detail, doing the little things where he's, you know, in position ahead of the play and doing something where he's kind of making life easier for him in the future. That kind of stuff isn't there.
Yeah. At all.
And it's, it feels very much like a guy who was a good high school defender purely because he was so much bigger than everyone else.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the playmaking stuff, like you pointed out, is really good. Like, I think he's got great hands and like really good timing with his hands. Like good when he does switch down, he's inconsistent in that sense, which I think is like pretty normal for guys that age that are bigger. Like sometimes he's just like way too handsy and narrow.
He'll get caught with his hands down a lot too.
Yes.
Like, especially like if he's playing at the level at the pick in the pick and roll or something, hands are at his waist. It's like, it's kind of ineffective, my guy.
Yeah. Well, and that's like one of my bigger, I think, gripes with him defensively is like, he's one of those like hands low late guys too, where like guys will come inside and he's just like too late to contest. Like whether it, and like sometimes it's a positioning thing. Like sometimes he just like didn't rotate to the rim fast enough or like didn't have the urgency. And then, yeah, other times he just like doesn't really get a hand up on a shot around the basket. And like his block rate is fine, but like, we talked about that weak schedule that they've played. So they've played 9 games. Notre Dame was a quad 3. I think West Virginia was a quad 1. The other games were all quad 4 games. Like we're talking Lehigh, Mount St. Mary's, St. Francis, PA, like UMBC. Like these are not good teams. So like his block rate for a center is fine, but like if, like when I do No Stone Unturned, if I saw a mid-major center with that block rate, I would think this guy's probably not going to be a great rim protector at the next level. And like, that's what he's played. Like that is the type of schedule that he's played thus far. Yeah, I think he's like a little slow off the floor. Kind of like slow up and down the court at times too, which I don't love.
Yeah. And I can't tell if that's a motor thing or a,
like just like a general like,
maybe he's just slow.
Yeah.
Like is he, because like laterally, I feel like he moves his feet relatively well for someone who's 6'10 to 60 or, you know, give or take. But yeah, like in transition, both going both ways, it's just kind of like he's lumbering up and down. It's like, I have to get out and run again. So it's like, I'm not loving that.
Yeah. I also feel like he's one of those guys where if he's going in one direction, he moves a little bit better. And then if it's like a directional change or a counter that gets thrown at him, or it's like, I'm going this way, now there's like a reversal pass and I'm going the other direction, it's always a little bit clunkier. I think there's like room to grow there. So like, I'm not like super hung up on that. But yeah, I think ultimately like where I'm settling on Sorber is, this is really interesting. I don't want to go like too cart ahead of the horse. I think like in a position like we're in, where we have to make boards is like part of what we do. I think he's like a reasonable guy to bet on at this stage, because I think he's going to get there eventually. I don't want to be like, it's not happening this year. And I also don't want to be like top 10. Like I'm kind of taking a coward's take with Sorber, but I think ultimately like this guy has a ton of NBA skills. He's smart, really sharp player, like can read the game quickly. I think he is going to score efficiently. I think he's going to shoot offensively. Like I just love the overall skill package. I just want to see the motor get there. I want to see the defensive consistency get there. And I think if it does, like there's a real chance we're talking about him as like a legit first round guy this year. Like I think that's absolutely on the table for him. But for sure. I think how it looks like when we're playing more real teams is going to matter. Like in between the Notre Dame and West Virginia games, he was 7-for-18 from the field. Assisted turnover was good, but he only had like 8 total rebounds in those games. It's just hard to know. It's hard to know what's what.
Yeah. And I have him like early to mid second. So like that 35 to 50 ish range, off the top of my head. And you know, you called it the coward's way. I think it's a responsible way.
Sure.
I mean, if your whole process is purely analytical and you want to shoot your shot and be like, plant your flag, this is my guy. It's a really, really good guy to kind of do it on early because the numbers right now, the production is everything you want from a 6'10 freshman big. The offensive versatility, the feel, the ball skills, they're really, really impressive. And all of that stuff really pops analytically. And when you're playing really bad competition. So you kind of talked about it with the block rate and stuff, but one block a game against this competition, that's really concerning for me. These are the teams where you really, you know, overindulge and inflate those numbers right now. And then by the end of the year, when they drop back down to 1.4, that's like, it's okay.
Yeah.
But like right now it should be like double what it is. And that's concerning. And I think that leads into more of the effort and work rate stuff, the attention to detail stuff, the processing speed, and the willingness to make himself uncomfortable. And that's something that I don't really get from him on either end of the floor of putting himself or, you know, willingly putting himself in positions that he may be a little uncomfortable with, but the team needs him to do.
Yeah. I think because like I think at times too, they sort of need him to be their like takeover scorer.
Yeah.
And I wish he used his handle more, which like I feel like a lot of times with bigs, I'm like, oh, do I really want you dribbling that much? But like with Sorber, there are a couple plays in the West Virginia and I believe the Notre Dame games too, where he hasn't taken a lot of long twos, but I feel like the ones he took were both in those like were in those two games specifically, where he'd catch a ball like sort of just above the elbow and then take the jump shot. And it's like, nah, I kind of want to see you put it on the deck there. Like you've got some juice. Like let's go to that. Or like, don't step in those 2 feet when you catch the ball and shoot a three, like do one of those two.
Yeah. That entire game, that West Virginia game, his like pick and pop was all into like the elbow almost or not even a little farther back, but he would just kind of drift into like these long twos. And it's like, okay, couple times that you've flashed an ability to attack a closeout and, you know, kick out to a weak, you know, opposite side corner shooter. It was like, okay, cool. When you pick and pop into the middle of the floor now, can you do like a one dribble spin back against, you know, the rotating defender and finish through contact or, you know, spin and kick it out to someone else or just lower your shoulder and go through the guy, draw a foul, get a bucket. Because I think I'm with you. I buy the shot. At least like in a pick and pop, you know, yes, trail exactly. three, yeah. you know, occasional spot up, sentiment, but the handle, it's better than he seems to be giving it credit for and wanting to kind of implement it in a lot of, there are a lot of really fun ways, whether it's DHO short roll stuff, creating for himself, further collapsing the defense in those situations. And he's just a little hesitant. To do it right now.
Yeah. I think that's going to be something I monitor. Overall scoring efficiency, which like I'm pretty bullish on that holding up. Yeah. And then, like how well the ball screen defense and like off ball, like rim help in like positioning is. Like if a guy's just in the dunker spot, like is he doing what you said earlier where he's like putting himself in position too early or doing the thing where it's just like a little too late to get over? So those are kind of the swing skills that I'm going to be monitoring for him here as the year progresses. But like, really good player. Like if you're somebody that's not paid attention to him, like definitely start, because I think this is translatable to the NBA at some point in time for sure. Just whether or not that's this year or not, like I'm still just exercising a bit of caution with. We're going to take a quick break, and on the other side, we're going to talk Cam Jones. Stick with us. All right. So when I guilted you behind the scenes into appearing on this episode, I asked kind of who you want to talk about, and you brought up Cam Jones from Marquette, who's not somebody I've got to talk about on the show yet this year. Boy, oh boy, what a season Cam Jones is. I part of the answer is like obvious, and it's that he's been really good. But what kind of made you want to focus on Cam Jones here?
Mainly that you hadn't talked about him yet, and I don't think I had talked about him with Rucker, at least in this kind of setting where we really dive into his game. Man, this dude rocks. He's so much fun, and it really feels like one of those kind of rare examples that we see a guy legitimately translate and evolve from being a spark plug off the bench role player into the guy, like the alpha and omega, the almost heliocentric model of an offensive creator. And he's doing that in spades.
It's so wild. So like, I was going back through my notes on him from past seasons, and like, I was always leery of him because it's like, okay, he's hyper efficient, but like a lot of this is eating off the backs of like Oso Iguodaro and Tyler Kolek. Like, you've got two of the best like playmakers for their positions in the country on your school. And it's like, okay, yeah, he's like super efficient at the rim, but like, he's got those guys like running offense for him. Okay, yeah, like he's for sure a great shooter, but like, I don't love the size, and like, he's not really a point guard, and he's not super athletic. He doesn't dunk very often or ever. And then like this year, but then like, I'd also look through my notes and be like, oh, what he does create for himself, like, it looks pretty good, and like, he makes some nice passes here and there. And then this year, it's like, oh no, he's just like the guy. Like, he can absolutely just do all of this himself too. He has a 42 assist rate right now, which is
ludicrous,
unfathomable to me. For a guy who was so off ball most of his career. But I also feel like even the defense has been a little better this year too, which is like nuts. It, like, he has this, it, like, his usage rate might not be higher per se, but like, his over, it's one of those things where it's like, usage rate, I feel like, can be deceiving in times of like what a player's actual workload is. And I just truly can't believe how much this guy is doing on the court. But even just like the comfortability dribbling for long periods of time, like some of the counters that he has, the using his like eyes and head for to like head fake and stuff like that. Like, really good, simple decision maker, but like, so much more juice is a creator than I anticipated.
I think he runs the best two-man game in the country right now. Like, this afternoon I was watching that Marquette Wisconsin game from Saturday. And I mean, he just carved up that Wisconsin defense, and you know, Wisconsin isn't loaded with NBA guys, but they're a well-coached, disciplined team. And for the first two thirds of that entire game, basically every pick and roll that he ran, they're kind of playing ice coverage, drop, show two guys. And he was just doing that over the head behind, you know, behind the back, behind the head, left-handed kick back to the pick and pop guy over and over and over and over and over again. And then, you know, Ben Gold hits four in a row and all of a sudden they're like, all right, crap, we have to switch how we do this. And then it's like, okay, so instead of, you know, having the drop guy go with Cam Jones too, just stay with the screener. And then it's like, all right, cool. And he bolts straight to the rim, finishes through contact, draws a foul. Next possession, they do the exact same thing. They're like, all right, crap, that didn't work. Let's switch this. So they switch right at the level. They're right there. Cam, you know, look or kind of faints like he's going to try and turn on the jets, turn the corner, gets the defender to flip his hips a little bit, steps back into the corner, knocks down a step back three, draws a foul. It's like, whatever you do right now, he's he's finding the counter in real time. Like he's still really left-hand dependent. the playmaking vision needs to continue to expand, but the comfort level in terms of creating for himself out of the pick and roll, getting to wherever he wants on the court, and the passing accuracy is really, really impressive right now.
Yeah, I just didn't expect him to be like such a like downhill threat for himself. Like, I really just didn't expect like the rim pressure and all that to be there. And then to your point, like, yeah, the accuracy on those passes and just making those simple ones well, between that and just his comfortability as like a spot up player and a cutter over the years, like I just think this is all like I keep using the word like NBA functional, but like he's gonna be a guy who knows how to play off of other really good players, and now he's showing the all important like I can do that too.
Yeah.
Which you really need when you're a guy who's probably going to measure at like 6'3", 6'4". So I just like don't really have a lot of gripes with his game at this point. I don't know what more he can do from a production standpoint. I think there are times where like he's a little too focused on the ball, off ball, like back will be turned to his man, like whatever, like that kind of stuff. I don't love the ground coverage defensively. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about his like defensive projection at the next level, and then like I guess as a result of that, how do you feel the offense weighs against it?
I definitely think the offense kind of makes up for a lot. Last year I thought his defense was really bad, mm-hmm. and I think it's taken a lot, it's progressed a ton this year.
Yes. Yeah.
Like again, sorry to go back to the Wisconsin game, but top of mind.
No, go for it.
But like on ball, like he's moving his feet, he's sliding with guys, really solid on the weak side, kind of tagging down, recovering back. I thought that was probably the best his defense has looked in the last year or so. Do I think he's going to be a good NBA defender? No. Do I think he can be good enough? Yeah. And have offensive production and creativity and creation outweigh whatever, you know, negatives that he brings on the defensive end. I think it will. So the fact that we're kind of still seeing him improve his defensive footwork, improve those fundamentals this early in the season while still carrying that massive workload, I think mm-hmm. is really encouraging, because at the NBA level, he's not going to have this level of workload.
Yes. Yeah.
Probably. So, you know, there's what, 10% more energy that you can divert to defense mm-hmm. instead. I know it doesn't always work like that, but you know, we can dream. But long story short, I think it's good enough, and it's improved a ton from last year.
Yeah. Well, and I just think too, it's like this type of player is also a guy where like, if there's some defensive shortcomings, like it is something that you can kind of work out and work around and get there in time, like whether it's like physical or skill wise or like measurement wise. Like I think about like how good a guy like Ty Jerome has been this year, and it's like, all right, well, like that's a guy like who has similar enough concerns that has managed to make it work and be really important on a really great team. So when I think about Cam Jones, like those are the things that I'm thinking through, where like this would be a much bigger deal breaker if it was like, oh, we need him to anchor our defense. But it's like when he's like a sort of a scoring oriented guard who now we know can like really run some offense for other people. Like, and also has like movement shooting chops and all these other things. It's like, there's just so many different ways that you can use him offensively and defensively. It's not like the most important position. Like if you were to tell me like a guy's a bad defender, I'd kind of prefer them to be a guard just in terms of the way that the modern NBA functions. Like you can kind of get away with it a little bit more. Like, I don't know. I'm really optimistic. Where would you feel comfortable taking him at this point? Because I was like semi-skeptical of him just for the reasons I outlined earlier prior to the year. Like I've been sort of slow to bump him up, but I think at this mm-hmm. point, like it's just sort of undeniable. Like I think he's a real deal. Like if you want to take him in the first round, if you're a competitive team, I think that's totally reasonable.
That's where I'm at. So it obviously depends on team and fit and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But honestly, once you get to like the late teens,
mm-hmm.
I'd be more than happy to kind of start considering him. Especially depending on what my guard situation looked like. So I just, the experience, the fact that we've seen him not only play, but thrive in multiple different roles over the last couple of years, mm-hmm. Combined with that massive growth and maturity and composure over those couple of years, it's all just really encouraging to me. And it kind of feels like he could. I know rookies aren't always this, especially at the point guard position. But like next couple of years, like he could just kind of be like that missing piece in a rotation, where instead of some random vet minimum that you're bringing in as your backup point guard, now you have Cam Jones, who's bringing a little bit more creativity, a little bit more shot making, rim pressure, and he's shooting 68.7% at the rim in the half court this year.
Which he's always been good at the rim. Like
while being purely below the rim.
Like even in past year, like that's the other thing with him is like, if this was the first time he'd shot this sort of percentage at the rim, I'd be more skeptical of it. He was 67.1% at the rim last year. The year before that, it was 66.7 again. Like he's a touch god. Like there's just some guys like that have that like Malik Monk style thing, which is like, wherever I am, I've got the touch. Like I can make shots anywhere on the court. It's going to happen. Like that's where he's at. So really great stuff from Cam Jones to start the year. Love what I'm seeing there. We're going to take one final break and then we're going to hit some sleepers. Stick with us. All right. I want to start off by bouncing a guy off you, cause I was really interested in your take on this player. So I caught him in the Michigan game, their game against Michigan earlier this year. That is Ian Elmer out of Miami, Ohio. He's a sophomore. I'm like way in on this guy as like a long-term NBA prospect. Elmer was somebody that I'd looked at potentially doing for No Stone this offseason. And I was like, nah, like not good enough, like not enough passing, like whatever. And then like he took those steps. Like he's a much better passer this season. Assist numbers are still like bleh, like they're not great. But his role is more like spot up shooting kind of thing. Attack the basket rather than like be the orchestrator of the offense, which I mean, fair concern. Like if we're talking about guys at Miami of Ohio, you'd probably like to see them taking on more of the offensive playmaking role. But Elmer is a legit 6'6". Like he looks, he's got some bulk on him. He is shooting 40.9% from three. He was 40.3% from three last year. Good volume throughout his college career. The guy rebounds. He's an awesome defensive playmaker. Both block and steal rates for this season are over 3.5. I just see a guy who really knows how to play the game, play within the flow of the game, can really shoot it, can move the ball, and then defensively, like, uses his length really well on the ball, can jump passing lanes, cover, like, does everything you kind of want in a role player. That like at that size and with his production, like I'm just buying him as a long-term dude that's eventually going to get real NBA looks.
So the key for what you just said for me, at least, is long-term. Because when you threw out this name, I'm like, oh, okay. This year? Like,
oh, no. yeah. we're talking down the road. Yeah.
We're feeling ourselves in early December. Okay. I think a lot of what you just kind of talked through, I saw a lot of it too. So I'm a little more skeptical on the shot. Obviously, I'm assuming you don't think he's going to shoot 50% from three on the year, or he's just Reed Shepard incarnate. So is it just me or is his release kind of a little funky?
It's the release is funky, and then like
he shoots like a bone ball. Seems like there's an absurd amount of arc on it.
Yeah. And like a lot of what he does is just like a little weird, which was like the other thing I didn't like about him too, was like the moonball shot and then like his gather footwork. Like he's one of those guys where like the like 2-point numbers are good, but just like the way he gets himself together at the basket, like looks messed up. Like it doesn't look right. And he doesn't get off the floor as well as you'd think he would. And the build up to him going to the basket.
That's bizarre. I wonder if there's some like really cool developmental story or something that connects all that. But the passing from like a connective standpoint really stood out to me. Like kind of like you mentioned, he's not going to be breaking guys down and creating the offense, but when the ball swings to him, he's probably making the right decision more often than not and making that extra pass or, you know, off of an offensive rebound, kicking it out to an open shooter who then swings it again or something like that. He just kind of seems to keep the offense flowing. And I never felt like the ball stuck with him. Right now, he's almost purely like a spot up scorer, play finisher type guy, where it's like, what, 55-60% of his possessions are spot up or transition. But and he's incredibly efficient at those. So if that's all you're going to do, you better do him really well. And that's, and he is. And then you kind of touched on the defensive playmaking. I thought his team defense looked fantastic with the rotation, so communication, just kind of being where he needed to be. I'm not totally sold on the athleticism and like how explosive or fluidly he moves. And you can kind of see that when he tries to occasionally, you know, attack the rim or create on ball. But that was kind of my only big concern with his defense, is that he kind of got blown by in that Indiana game a handful of times.
Yes.
Miles Rice had a really good game that game. So, you know, maybe he was just feeling himself, but it felt like his hips were a little stiff. His feet were a little slow. But again, just room for improvement in the future.
That was my top like negative note on his defense, was that I wish he was a little bit quicker laterally and a bit more seamless in his slide. Like those, like the first like two things that I have is like, I wish there's just like a little more fluidity, a little more quickness. The other thing I've noticed with him too, is like in the, I think it was in the Michigan game, like he'll have success like totally smothering guys at times. And then I feel like I've seen more of this year than in years past, where guys like will guard so tight on the ball that they make themselves easy to beat. Like they'll just get so into guys, and like then like they'll reach and then they're just like burned. And like because of like you mentioned, like the overall just speed isn't really there. Like his recovery isn't great. Like he's gonna have to play with a level of refinement and care. Like he's not a guy that can be Tari Eason. Like he can't. No. Like garner the defensive playmaking by being all over the place all the time. And I think on offense where that shows up most is the first step. Like I mentioned, like the gather footwork concerns, but like also like if you do close out super hard, like he's just not the fastest in that first step off the line getting downhill. So like I love the bones of his game. Like I love the shooting. Like we've got a pretty good sample of him being a real deal shooter. It is kind of concerning that he's a bad free throw shooter, but like, so is Ben Shepherd. So like, maybe that's just fine. Just
one of those weirdo stat relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, like the defensive play making the shot, I really like it. I kind of hope he's a guy that like maybe doesn't transfer up.
I was going to ask you that. Like, would you prefer that he transfers up to a big time school and like proves that he's a lethal spot up shooter at a power four team,
or
stay where he's at and grow more into that kind of primary creator role, develop the ball skills a little bit more, loosen up athletically, and then maybe even transfer up after that?
I would prefer him to wait one more year. I'm like a big like there's value in being the man believer. I think we saw it with like the way J-Dub like slowly got bigger roles at Santa Clara, the way that like Ben Shepherd at Belmont, like I think Cedric Howard this year, like being a guy who was at Eastern Washington that followed his coach to Washington State instead of going to a bigger program when he probably could have, like he's taken a big step forward this year. Like I just think with a lot of these mid-major guys, you don't want to like Cade Tyson yourself and suddenly like be in a situation where it's like, oh man, like I was a really good like scorer and kind of complimentary guy, and like I didn't really have the on-ball creation chops yet, and now I went somewhere where there's just better basketball players than me, and now I'm riding the pine. Like I would prefer him to have one like I am the man season before he makes that leap to the high major level. My guess is he probably won't, and like I don't fault guys who do in like the economic climate that we're in. Like you got to do it. Like I have never been in a position where someone's like, do you want $500,000 right now? So like, I'm never going to tell somebody actually,
but if anyone's listening, that, you know, our DMs are open. So
yeah, I would love that. I would do whatever you want for $500,000. So, like I try not to like judge guys for it, but, I think from a pure, like if you took money out of it and it's just like pure basketball development, I'd like him to stay there one more year.
I think I lean that way with you too, because especially, you know, NBA level. And if the percentages and all that kind of stuff kind of maintains for him, it's like, all right, cool. Now we have, 2 years of you proving to be an NBA-esque level spot-up shooter. The problem is those windows get so much smaller. And once you get run off the line, you got to do something. You got to be able to attack the rim, get to a mid-range pull-up, attack, collapse the defense, make a skip pass. And every year we see guys just simply not make it because they can't do that.
Yeah. One of my favorite things to look at on Synergy is like on the spot up position possessions to go over to like the twos off of spot ups. Like it's big, like why I'm a believer in Neat Clifford. It's like the Neat Clifford spot up two game is so good because like he'll spot up, beat guys off the line, get to the basket and score. And like Elmer on his spot ups has taken 24 threes and 4 twos, which basically means like when he is run off the line, like he doesn't have a way to score. Yeah. If you force him off the line, like he's not even taking field goals in that situation, because it's either just like he's passing or he's moving the ball before it even gets to that point. Like there is no spot up into a 2-pointer game for him right now. And there's guys that can win in different ways of that. There are floater guys, there's mid-range pull-up guys, there's guys that get all the way to the basket. And like right now he just does not have that. And that's a necessity if you're going to like actually play in the NBA versus like a guy who maybe gets a 10-day contract at some point.
Yeah, you have to be able to dribble, pass, and shoot. And if you can't do one, you become incredibly easy to defend. And then even just having that threat of being able to attack the closeouts opens up even more three-point opportunities for him because it keeps the defenders thinking. And, you know, maybe every now and then they're going to close out short. And it's like, all right, cool. Now I have an open three over the top of you. So,
just
an important kind of skill set for him to really continue to build on.
For sure. And I think even like a guy like a Jalen Wells is like a good example to point to, where like he didn't get to the rim in college a ton, but like he has enough like wiggle and quickness that it's not like, obviously like you're hoping when Jalen Wells gets the ball that he's got enough space to just like launch that three. Yeah. But like if he does have to take that step in and pull up with it with a two, or if he does have to resort to a floater, or like, you know, get all the way to the rim, like he can do it okay enough that like you can live with the results. Is he a great finisher? No, but like it's fine. Like you can live with the results. And like Elmer has to get to that point where you can live with him going inside the arc. Let's talk Danny Wolf. He was the guy that you had brought up is sort of your sleeper that you wanted to discuss. Wolf is a guy I did for No Stone this offseason, and I did not anticipate like what we've seen this year. Like I liked him, and I thought this was kind of like a pipe dream as far as like him ever being in the type of shape that he's in now.
Yeah.
Give me your overall just take on Danny Wolf and what way you want to talk through him today.
And he's primetime television right now. Whether it's good or bad, it's going to be fun. my God, has he been an experience this year? I know we had talked about him a little bit last year when he was at Yale, and it was really fun, but you kind of mentioned it. He looks lighter on his feet this year. He looks like he's moving a little more fluidly. The defense is, I won't classify it as good, but it's disruptive.
A lot
of time. And they've started running these like 4 or 5 pick and rolls with him and Golden. And it's been a lot of fun. What do you, have you seen what his turnover rate is?
I have. I've seen the turnover rate.
31.7.
Yeah. You know, like you do.
not ideal.
No. And like, he was like a little turnover prone last year. What do you think the turnover problem is? Because like some of them, I'm just like, what was that? Like some of them like are legit. Like I threw that into the fourth row. Some of them I think are like miscommunication. I'm getting used to my new teammates, like kind of thing. But some of them like are bad to the point where I'm like, this is always going to be a guy that turns it over quite a bit.
Yeah. And he passed and created a ton at Yale last year, but it felt more in like that traditional center role for like where it's like top of the elbow, you know, out of the short roll, that kind of stuff. Not all right, I'm gonna grab the defensive rebound and push and transition.
Yeah, I'm running a ball screen. Right. Like that was just something that Yale, like Bez Mbeng, was not setting screen for him last season.
Like so like I think he's being put in a lot of new positions and situations that he just has to adjust to, but a lot of the passing accuracy stuff comes and goes, let's say. In that Iowa game, and he airmailed a couple, and you know, a couple wide open corner shooters were doing their, you know, best Randy Moss impression of trying to stretch out and catch it. I think it's more, it's the majority of it is just how much the type of his usage has kind of quickly and rapidly elevated.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I hadn't.
That's what I'm hoping for, at least.
Yeah, I because like I do think just like his overall skill set and level of feel. Like, yeah, because your point, like you mentioned at Yale, it was a much more simplified game for him offensively there. That, like, I don't know. Like, I've always just been kind of optimistic. Like, in general, if a guy can make good passes, I usually buy the fact that they can just stop making the bad ones or at least cut them a little bit. Like, we see it all the time. Like, there's so many guys, even like Jamal Murray, who was like a little more like turnover heavy in college than like when he got to the NBA. Like, assist to turnover is one of those things. Like, if a guy can score, you usually just see that sort of whittle away over time. Like, it gets better and better and better. So I do think that can improve. And like the rebounding is still there too. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, but like just to kind of further emphasize that. So like last year at Yale, he was the pick and roll ball handler 3.7% of the time. Mm-hmm. This year, it's his second most common play type per synergy at 15.6%. And the only one, and that's tied with transition at 15.6% as well. So it's a very drastic. And then, you know, he's only the roll man 10% of the time compared to 12 last year. So,
and it looks like that is
a lot of the offensive initiation for them.
And like of the common play types, that is like where the turnovers are coming from, it looks like as well. So understandable. And transition, where like he's doing it as a ball handler. This is not like rim running transition stuff. Like that's why the turnovers are high there too. But yeah, like I'm really optimistic. And like, so when I did know son, I do like reminds me a little bit of, because like I think it's unfair to like, I've become a player comp guy. Corey has convinced me to become a player comp guy.
It's a necessary evil.
Yes, it is. But I do, like, it reminds me a little bit of, because like with some of the guys I'm covering for that series, it's like, I can't tell you that this guy at like Albany is like, he's actually a lot like Draymond Green. Like I can't. But like I did, it reminds me a little bit of Naz Reid, just because I was like, at the time, it's like, I need to like somehow can like, who is like a dribble pass shoot big, and it's like Naz Reid is like the one, like, so I threw him in there, and like even at the time I was like kind of plugging my nose while doing it. But you are the Timberwolves guy. How close is Danny Wolf to attaining a Naz Reid outcome?
I would be pretty skeptical.
It's a very like, narrow mold too,
because like Naz has always been like a really good athlete. He was just kind of fat in college.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then had like a total body transformation and has basically turned into more of a wing, especially recently in like this last year or two. And he's so freaking fluid and explosive. Do you think Wolf is so currently he's shooting what, 32% from outside? Do you expect that to be higher? Do you buy the shot? That's something else where Naz, like, he was always kind of like at LSU that his freshman year, he was a good kind of like trail guy, occasional pick and pop. He had good volume there, but again, his outside shooting game has totally transformed.
So I buy Wolf shot mostly because of the volume. So like of bigs who've stuck in the last like 8 years or so, his volume would be like top 20% of that group. Of big. So for like a guy who's tall, Danny Wolf is like a very prolific shooter. Percentage wise, like for a big, again, he's still like, he's like top 40 percentile. Like it's not awesome, but then like you've got to consider like the bottom 20 percentile guys like never shot threes at all in college, because we're talking bigs. But like for a big man, like the efficiency is okay and the volume is great. So I do think he'll probably settle into being like a solid shooter.
Yeah.
I think the concern is that if he's not a knockdown guy, it really saps the life out of a lot of what he's bringing to the table.
Yeah.
Is he playable in the NBA without, like, if he's at like 33%, like you can probably put him out there for a while and it's fine, but like, is he good? No. Like, is he a good NBA player at that point? And he's not.
Yeah, agreed.
So that's where it needs to come around. Like the volume needs to get there. The turnovers need to be reduced. But I think like he just really deserves like a real like level of a round of applause just for getting himself into so much better shape in such a short period of time and like just embracing this wildly different role, if nothing else.
Yeah, he's almost playing point guard for them this year. And it's a huge transformation, not just to go from Yale to Michigan.
And sure, yeah.
They've played Miami of Ohio, like we talked about earlier, Xavier, Wisconsin, Iowa, mm-hmm. Wake Forest. Like they've had a
real
pretty
team.
Solid real team schedule. And for him to kind of be thrown into the fire and like, hey, Danny, welcome to the Big Ten, first of all. Also, go run point guard with a bunch of guys that you've never played with before. I it's a lot. But, you know, he's out there doing it. The decision making needs to get tightened up a little bit, but I think they'll come in time. I think from what we saw at Yale last year, some of the creative stuff that they can run off of him, especially once that chemistry is there, it can be really, really fun. So is he an NBA guy? I don't know. I'd be kind of surprised if he doesn't play professionally in some form or fashion.
Oh, totally.
But like you said, the shot's going to have to kind of prove that it's workable. I think it will, but it kind of goes back into the decision-making stuff too. So at a minimum, he is one of the most fun players in college basketball right now.
I would be stunned if he's not on a two-way coming out whenever that comes. He also doesn't turn 21 until May. It's like he's a younger guy.
Sneaky young.
Yeah, sneaky young.
That's fun.
If I were to say, like, this is tough because the Timberwolves are like a team that is like so well set at the big man spot. But like, let's just say you're running an NBA team and I'm like, hey, which asset would you rather have? Would you rather have Quentin Post or would you rather have Danny Wolf? Like, you get Danny Wolf starting right now or you get Quentin Post starting right now. Or like, Post is like 24, but like, you knew he could really shoot it. But like, didn't really have also like a good passer, but like maybe doesn't have some of the sauce that Danny Wolf has, but like really good, like good measurements, not super strong enough, like shot blocking, but like a real deal knockdown guy. Like, would you bet on the upside with Wolf or would you rather take a guy like Quentin Post who like really like hasn't really played or done anything yet, but you know, he can shoot.
Yeah. I was never a big Post guy. So I would go Wolf pretty easily just because I think the different stuff that you could theoretically run with him. I think that playbook and, you know, schematically is a lot more wide open. Whereas I think Post is, I don't think he moves anywhere near as well as Wolf does. And I think you kind of have to exclusively play him in like a pretty deep drop. And if he gets pulled out into space, it's like, scary hours. Not that Wolf is going to be locking guys down or anything,
but like, he's found ways to get steals. Like,
a little cat and mouse game. So I would go with Danny there.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Cause I thought that was interesting. Cause like, Quentin Post was like, to me, kind of the model initially. And now it's like, this is just a different type of dude. Like, I kind of thought it was going to be a lot more like Danny Wolf really figured out how to shoot. Then like, Danny Wolf got into really good shape and now he runs ball screens for Michigan. Like, this is just not what I saw coming. Really cool. Just odd development track record. So we're going to wrap it up right there. Tyler, where can people find you on social media and what have you got coming out soon for No Ceilings?
NoCeilingsNBA.com. I think I'm at T Metcalf on Twitter, Tyler Metcalf or something like that on Blue Sky, doing film breakdowns. And film school stuff on Prospects NBA guys over the No Ceilings YouTube channel. This week I will have a couple written pieces of a scouting notebook for Plus subscribers. Got to see Jace Richardson and that Michigan State team against Minnesota last week, and then Money Williams of Montana against St. Thomas. There'll be a couple deep cuts in there as well, so keep an eye out for that. And then I'll be having a more of a long form write up on Cam Jones later this week as well. And awesome. Jeremiah Fears the week after.
Great. Sounds good. I'm excited for all that. If you haven't checked out Tyler's like work on the YouTube channel, you're missing out. Like some of the best stuff that we have going on. So absolutely love what you're doing over there. Make sure you're giving him a follow. If you're not already, you should be. If you're listening to this, you should be. Follow me at Boundboards. By the time you're listening to this, most likely the Thomas Sorber article will be up. So go give that a read. Also hoping that next week I'll have a spreadsheet sleepers up on No Ceilings Plus. So that's the goal. We're hoping to get that knocked out in the next week. But until then, we will see you all next week. Have a great night.